Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Hey there, welcome to ATL and 29, an ambiguously sponsored podcast where we look at the NBA from the starting point of Atlanta. My name is Kevin Chouinard. I'm here with Glenn Willis. And Glenn, how are you enjoying podcast limbo?
I'd like to think at my age, I've had my seasons of limbo and have gotten better at it as I've gotten older. So I'm doing okay.
All right. Yeah, I just wanted to start with a note that while we don't technically know what our future is with SB Nation, and while we will be handcuffed but by my technical limitations, I could probably set up a podcast and get it hosted, and I've done that in the past. I just need to remember how. But if we do get nixed, we will exist in some form, one or another.
Yeah, good to know. When I had a podcast, I paid someone to do all that. It's only fair that I pitch in too. So we're going to have to find a weekend hour or two or something where you can train me on some of those tasks so that I'm carrying my own weight here with the podcast.
All right. I've also heard that if an opposing player misses two free throws in the fourth quarter and you show up with a last 2-minute report, you can get a free Chick-fil-A chicken sandwich.
Oh, that's better than the Nuggets, right? It's a whole sandwich.
Yeah. How about that last 2-minute report? How are you feeling about that?
Ow! Wait. Oh, man. Terry Rozier just kicked me. That was weird.
Oh, I'm sorry.
it was factual, you know. So sometimes I think when it's a close call, they'll, you know, protect their officials some, which, I mean, you know, I like when my employer has my back when it's, like, you know, if he, you know, kind of 50-50 thing or whatever, but that's just, I mean, I immediately, it's like, I can't believe they called that. You know, that's like one of the most obvious interpretation calls that is, like, very well socialized across the officials. So yeah, it's hard to bounce back with that little bit of time left. The Hawks had two timeouts and a possession, but, you know, they win the game if that foul's not called. So sort of stuff.
I actually do think that it has some value just because Jalen Johnson had been playing pretty confidently of late, and you don't want to see a play like that mess with his head. And I think it'll help him to know that, you know, he didn't do it. I think there was some saltiness at the end of the game between Trey and Nate, and I think that helps there as well. Just they can point at a third party instead of at each other. So, right. You know. I think there's some, you know, normally you look at it, you say, well, so what? That doesn't have any value. But I think that was such a fatigued, emotional game that was sort of charged in a few different ways. And I think, you know, just being able to look somewhere else and say, yeah, we kind of just need to flush that one, I think that can be helpful.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that. That's a good point. You'd hope that irrespective of what the L2M said, but a coach would say, hey, that was a bad call. You know, and it's kind of funny, like, you know, you see the worst of kind of fan venting, I guess, after a close loss, especially against a team with a terrible record like Charlotte. But Jalen shouldn't even put himself in that situation. Wait, did you see how many 3-point shots Terry Rozier had made in that game? You don't want Jalen to close out. Come on, get out of here with that stuff. You know, it was a good closeout. He challenged the shot. He contested the shot legally. So, you know, hopefully, you know, Jalen's getting some on the back for deploying the right technique there, you know. So I want to ask you, because, I mean, the other thing I heard a lot about was, why is Trey inbounding the ball, the smallest guy The other team consistently puts their big man right in front of him. And you know, I sort of see two sides of the argument. One is like, okay, he's not going to have much as much space as a say a 6'7" person or whatever. We all remember like Jalen's inbound to AJ against the Bulls, you know, for the game winner, right? In that case, Jalen was the inbounder. But a lot of people, a lot of Hawks fans are like angry about Trey being put in that spot. So I like he's your best passer. He's the best passer on the team by quite a bit. So I kind of get that, especially in a short clock situation, you want the most accurate pass you can get. On the other hand, it is tough if they put a, you know, 6'10", 6'11" guy right in front of him. What's your thought on that decision to use Trey as an inbound in that kind of situation?
I think it's fine. You know, it seems perfectly reasonable. I wanted to backtrack to what you said about Jalen. Like, I do think that while that was a legal closeout and whatnot, I do think you want him to get. I would like to for him to give himself a little bit of a bigger margin of error to avoid that foul call. Like, I kind of feign the closeout a little bit more and kind of be there and. You know, try to look like you're going to close out that space, but I don't think you want to be up that close. It just seems like it's a little too easy to be in a foul situation. Even if that one wasn't, I don't know. It just seems like on those plays, more often than not, what ends up being the deciding factor is whether or not a foul is called, not whether or not the shot goes in. I don't know. I think I'd like to see him a little bit further. A little bit more space between him and the shooter there. I know that the shot can go in and whatnot, but the thing I'm most concerned with there is a foul.
Yeah, the way that I understand that's coached the most is stay away from the elbow, stay away from the body, contest it up high, you know, and that's, I mean, to me, like the way it's taught is the way he did it. So, but I mean, you know, there's this other philosophy, like make him make the shot, right? Make
Yeah.
him make that shot. So, you know, maybe a little more clearance. I don't know. But he did, in my mind, he made no mistake, you know,
Yeah.
in my view, right? So it took a bad call on the official's part, and you know, and there's other discussion around should the NBA be able to, I mean, like I said on Twitter, like did the other two officials not see the play? Could they not like huddle? And it seems like in other sports, like officials and umpires and referees kind of lean on each other, you know, what did you see? What did you see? Kind of a situation. So it just surprises me. Like, I mean, that is an obviously wrong call. It was like in real time, I was like, I can't believe, you know, we all know the high five's legal. High five, we hear it all the time. It's
Yeah.
like, you know, so it's, I, you know, I know the NBA doesn't want to make the end of the game situation longer. You know, like a couple seasons ago, they went from you can only carry two timeouts under the 3 minute mark for that exact reason. Because literally, like, back in our day, like the last 5 minutes of the game would take 1 hour and 45 minutes. It felt like, you know, everybody would say sit on all their timeouts until the last few minutes of the game. So I know the NBA wants to be cautious about having, you know, really, really, really long games, but you know, I don't know. Maybe there's something to you if you win your challenge, you get one more, or so, I don't know, but because that it's hard, you know, that short clock is hard to kind of come back and get yourself a kind of shot you're looking for. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Trey's got to get the ball into somebody. You know, I'll say that. And I know he seemed frustrated, like you mentioned. I don't know if you want to expand upon that at all, but he
Well,
definitely looked frustrated.
it's very weird, and I've argued the flip side, so it's going to seem weird for me to argue this now. But it's hard for me to see Trey bust his butt playing defense for five games better than he ever had in his career. To me, I
For
think that
sure.
was his best five game defensive stretch in 5 years.
Agreed.
I would leave him in. I would say, you know what? You earned it, buddy. You're playing defense. And so for him to get pulled for Jalen, have Jalen commit the foul, he's probably thinking, you know, why am I killing myself on defense for this? And By the numbers, it's probably better to put Jalen in there, but I think there's an emotional, psychological element that you reward Trey there. Not, there have been all kinds of situations where he's been on for single defensive possessions in this season, and it's like, no, why? No, God, no. And like now, in this one instance, I would do it. I would put Trey and say, here's your certificate of playing badass defense for a week. You're in there. And so I
Positive
think
reinforcement.
that might have
Yeah.
been why, it was a little bit emotionally charged for him late. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be interesting. He's usually pretty good with the media, but he doesn't give you any information you don't that's not specific to the question that you've asked typically, right? So I didn't get to see post game there.
Yeah, Nate was very short with his answers, and Trey seemed upset, but was more cordial and more willing to go into it.
Right.
I actually asked him about what I want to ask you about next. I asked him about the trapping, and he gave a lot of credit to the Hornets rookie center back up there, saying that he was really effective in the trapping. But I wanted to ask you, what did you think of the Hornets' use of trapping and maybe trying to force turnovers and transition and having that play into sort of the Hawks' fatigue? What could the Hawks have done better against the trap? Because it seemed like it was getting them out of their rhythm.
Well, I mean, so I continue to think that this is where they miss Gallo the most because the last year they would use Gallo quite a bit. And Gallo didn't have any juice in that Miami series, so just should throw that out there. And this year is kind of in bogey. They'll run a guard big, staggered screen, and kind of then bring kind of bogey back towards the ball, or use bogey in sort of a quasi kind of short roll situation. So, I wish they would trust Onyeka more in short roll, a lot more. I think I trust John there as well. I think Onyeka is a little bit more skilled for that. But John's been showing a lot more recently, passing decision making. He's made some nice passes here in the last few weeks and things like that. But that's just not something that they get to. That I think it seems like Nate is an old school coach believes in guards handling the ball, right? And that kind of limits them a little bit, and it, to me, I don't want to get on like sound like I'm Nate bashing, but it is a. I think a newer kind of generation of coaches are have see that differently, than the older school coaches do. Where it's like, I mean, even like if you just watch the Hawks broadcast, right? Dominique will say all the time, "Give the ball to your guard. Give the ball to your guard," and things like that. And that's my generation. I was a guard in high school and I barked at my big men if they were, dribbling it more than once or something like that, So I just think there are options that they don't go to. And I think that especially with Onyeka and JC, they have that opportunity to kind of to do that. But I don't think Nate's gonna change, at this point. So that's what I see.
All right.
But
What other? Go ahead.
I mean, I still think the biggest factor in the game was the Hawks' schedule. So 6 and 9,
Oh, for sure.
travel in between each of the first five, and then straight into a back to back. So I made some notes here. In the first quarter, they made 12, missed 7 shots. Second quarter, made 13, missed 9. Third quarter, made 11, missed 8. The fourth quarter, they made 9 and missed 14. Now, they were 9 for 23. Charlotte was 11 for 23. The difference basically came down to Charlotte got 12 free throws. The Hawks got 4 in the fourth quarter. It's harder to defend without fouling when you're tired, could there's something to be said for like could more what could Jalen have played more minutes and shorted the time of the of like DeAndre, or could Aaron have played more, on the second night of a back to back? Could AJ have played more? I think Nate feels like it seems like Nate feels like he's got to kind of shorten the rotation in the second half when the game's close, And I still wish Jalen would play more, but I also understand Nate's trying to get his team kind of, I would presume he's thinking like, we got to break out of this pack, that we're in and kind of start pushing up towards the top six. And closing some ground kind of gives ourselves a chance to kind of get up there. So I understand. I kind of that aspect, I kind of understand where the coach is coming from. But at the same time, it's like, 6-9, probably the roster depth issue that we all saw heading into the season is probably factor number one there. Maybe if there were one or two more kind of vets that are in that 10, 11, 12 spot, could Justin have played some during this stretch, at some point to kind of help you out? I don't think he's complete garbage like half the fan base seems to think. But they, I mean, despite, I mean, I could see, I don't know if you agree, but on their jump shots in the fourth quarter, their legs were just gone. Nothing was going in out there except DeJounte kind of, miraculously still kind of making a shot here and there and such. But they kept fighting and they kept playing hard. If you want to call like what Rozier's shot making like something they should have shut down, that was just him pulling and making shots, is which like he does sometimes. I didn't think there was any kind of fundamental issue on defense there until they started kind of fouling. So I mean, their energy, they ran out of gas, in my mind. And Charlotte played hard, and Steve Clifford always coaches up his team defensively. So he threw some stuff at them that was, to your point, beginning of this part of the question conversation. They're tired, so we're gonna apply a lot of ball pressure. I mean, the other interesting thought I had today was out of these six games, if they were gonna take a loss, this is the game that you'd want them to take the loss, because the other ones, I have a lot of those have an opportunity to kind of show up as a head-to-head kind of seeding tiebreaker, where you presume Charlotte's not gonna be in that range. So I mean, as much as you'd be like, well, you got to beat Charlotte, if they were going to go 5-1 in these six, that's probably the way I'd pick it to go.
Yeah, there were some definitely some tired legs in the fourth quarter. There was one where Trey got a floater, and I honestly think he missed the floater because he was not used to being that open on his floater. It was like he leaned forward into it where he usually goes up. He kind of came forward instead, and it's like he was so open that he like changed his motion to try to kind of, just aim the ball in. But it's like, he probably should just shoot it the way he always shoots it, as if there's a defender there, because he changed the motion and missed it. But, I thought the Hawks were ready for the Hornets sort of base defense. Steve Clifford plays a lot of drop. He's got his bigs like Plumlee, and they're playing a deep drop, and the Hawks were ready. It kind of fed into DeJounte's hot 2 week stretch here. He just got to the middle and just kept making floater after floater after floater. And that's actually a question that I want to ask him at some point. It's like, do you call what he shoots a floater? It's like this, like one-legged kind of one arm. It's kind of a floater, but it's also kind of just this little flippy little jump shot. I don't know if, Trey shoots a floater, but DeJounte's is like, I don't know. But you know what it is. Obviously, his bread and butter shot there is to get to 13 feet and just kind of get up and reach it in. And he was doing that against the Hornets, as was Hunter, as was Trey. Like they were doing the thing on offense in the first half, exactly like you'd want against that style of defense.
Yeah, I think back in the 90s, or maybe even in the early 2000, 2005, that would have been called a runner. Like, no one
A
calls any of
runner.
those a run.
Yeah,
Yeah,
that's fair.
no one uses that term anymore, right? But and it seems like a push shot is only bigs. Like, it seems like, and but guards use a push shot sometimes,
Yeah, I wouldn't call that a push
so
shot. It's
I
like
think a runner is, yeah.
a runner, that's fair.
Our young listeners are like, what the world's a runner?
That's fair. I like that.
I mean, I don't think this game takes away from, hopefully it doesn't take away from their confidence. I've been putting a lot of defensive clips out on Twitter around, to your point earlier, like Trey more communicative, more engaged, taking response. Well, you and I talked a little bit about how he's taken some own responsibility to keeping himself out of trouble. Not waiting on a teammate to scram him out of a situation, or get him out of low man or whatever. And so, hopefully their vibe is, hey man, we worked hard enough to get that win. Got a tough whistle at the worst part of the game. Let's just keep working. Let's keep doing what we're doing and stay focused and and keep going. So, let's hope this isn't distract them or get them off track in any way. That's what I'm hoping for anyway.
Yeah. Any other places you want to go? The other things from the Hornets game, the Knicks game.
I mean, the Knicks, they're just a different team without Mitchell Robinson. I mean, it's
Right.
fun. My opinion of him is funny because he's so naturally disruptive as a defender, even though he still makes a ton of mistakes. He's getting better. He gets a little better every year, but he still makes a ton of mistakes. But he's so big and he plays with so much energy that he can use his athleticism and size to recover from mistakes, And so I don't know how the Knicks kind of function without him. I mean, I've always thought Hartenstein was one of the better backup centers in the league. So I
Yeah.
thought it was a great signing for them. Jericho Sims is a young guy who I think shows some promise,
Sure.
offensively, more offensively. He's a nightmare to keep off the offensive glass. Absolute, nightmare. It was a fun. I just thought it was funny to watch a Nate team and the Tibbs team put up like 130 on what I don't remember what the score was, but it's like
I
that's just
think the
kind of
Hawks got to
funny.
139, if I remember right. That's a lot of points.
And both teams were making. I mean, Julius Randle's been on the hot streak for a good 4 or 5 weeks now, and Brunson, is a very capable, kind of guard and stuff like that. But it's funny to watch both teams play kind of smaller guards and really need their big men. And the Hawks had Capella for not a full allotment of minutes, and Onyeka has been pretty good these last few weeks. And I thought that was probably the difference in the game, was that for some stretches that the Hawks were able to defend the paint a little better, and kind of go from there. I mean, it was interesting to watch the Hawks. And I put this out on Twitter. I think like the Pacers. I'm going to get this order wrong. You might have to help me with the 5-game winning streak. The Pacers, they had to get Onyeka all the way up the floor. I won't go in order. Against Dallas, they blitzed Luka. Against the Knicks, they switched in the middle and iced on the side. And who am I
Raptors,
missing?
Raptors.
Raptors, a lot of switching in that game. The Raptors is just too big to not switch, And then you came in to get Charlotte, and they were playing kind of playing more of a they were high I would not a deep drop, but a kind of a mid drop and the work over the screens, And so I still and I think
Oh,
Kiff
there was
are
a Heat
tired.
game too.
Oh
There was a
yeah,
lot of fighting over screens. Was that one?
a lot of fighting over screens, and then in the second half they went to some selective switching, right? To keep the ball out of the middle mostly. So it's just like. Almost six, I mean, pretty much six different defensive game plans. And in 9 days, you have to assume not so much prep time, get walkthroughs is basically kind of probably mostly what you're getting there. And that's a lot. That's a lot for a team. And against Chicago, so far this year, they've switched a lot just to try to keep DeMar out of his spots and to kind of keep some pressure on Zach, and kind of go from there. So I presume they'll be switching one through five even. The Hawks are really trusting Clint a lot on wings, right now, and stuff. So but that to me that factors too. I wanted to ask you this. Do you think that's all of the variety of defensive schemes? Like, is that why Jalen's maybe not playing so much? Or and I'm not picking on him, but as a young guy, and a young big, like the different schemes. The scheme variation hits your centers and power forwards a lot harder than your guards and wings, right? So, any thought to like that being a reason why Jaden's not playing as much right now?
I mean, it could be. I mean, that seems reasonable. It's, I wouldn't say that there are a ton of good reasons. So if you strike one that seems sort of plausible, that could be it. I mean, it's certainly a question that I could add. One thing that came up the last time Nate was asked about Jalen not playing that much, as he said that he wants to use DeAndre at power forward more. DeAndre's playing a lot of minutes. DeAndre, to me, DeAndre's
Too
playing a
many.
concerning a number of minutes. Like, if
Yes.
there's one thing that I look at in the rotation where it's like, whoo, other than like Bogey playing 19 straight minutes, just the overall number of minutes DeAndre is playing, and he's playing great, but I would love to see that tapered down just a little bit for his sake, so that he has his best path to being well in April.
I agree. Yeah, and it's funny because I had someone on Twitter ask me about that, and I was like, even when Hunter is playing at the four on offense, he still a lot plays the three on defense. Like, and they'll play Bogey kind of at the four on defense, which is, more chasing over screens, more exerting in a lot of ways for him,
I mean, but
so.
Bogey's also like, if you're worried about, he's, certainly not the same kind of defender, but if you're worried about just sort of executing the scheme the right way, he's, he's going to do that. Like, he's not going to make the mental mistakes. He knows
Yep,
what's coming.
for sure. And he's going to communicate. He's seen it all. Where understandably Jalen's still, earlier in his, reps and all that. So, I mean, I've been on my, I've been saying that Jalen needs to play. Jalen needs to play. They're going to need him. They need him to get better. They need to get him more. They need him to be more consistent. Although he's been pretty darn good for 2 or 3 weeks now, making shots even. Still good in transition, flashing on defense, and I just feel like down the stretch, they're going to need him, and he needs to be playing. So now, when they're, winning five in a row, it's hard to kind of be too critical about whatever decisions they're making to kind of get them there. So I just think it's more of a big picture kind of macro type thing that they need to play Jalen so that he's progressing and getting to be a reliable rotation piece because they're gonna need them. So that's my view. So it was a fun 5-game winning streak, won some important games against teams that like we talked about that they end up with a material tiebreaker kind of situation. Another one of those tomorrow night with the Bulls, and there's more. I think at the Heat again this week. Is that right? I forget now, looking at kind of what that schedule is. Oh, they're going to be in Portland a week from tomorrow. I might go down and try to catch that game in person. Want to see how my schedule. If my schedule is like it was the last 2 weeks, I have no shot. I have no shot of getting down there. But maybe I'll cross my fingers and see if my schedule will cooperate. It'd be nice to get down there. So, yeah, it's just hopefully they just go right back to playing the way they've been playing. In this game against the Charlotte, still the first 2.5 quarters or whatever you want to call it, they were still communicating great on defense, working, there, staying connected, all that sort of stuff. They just ran again. I saw those Hawks fans are like, it's the Hornets. I'm like, these are still human beings, 6-9, all that travel, it's gonna hit you, especially when you're playing kind of an 8.5 man rotation through all that, and Clint, with some limited minutes there, got to push and yak a little bit and all that. So, is there any rhyme or reason to DeJounte kind of getting back to the offensive player he was at the beginning of the season, or is it just hot, cold rhythm? Anything you see there? Because he's been
No.
awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I just
Shots are just going in now.
shots are going in. Yeah, I think
No.
that's a big part of it. I mean, I do think that Trey has enabled him a little bit. I think he's a little it does seem a little more organic and a little less sometimes early in the season you just kind of see the backcourt pass of, Trey would fling DeJounte one and say, "Okay, it's your turn." Like, it was,
Like old Katie and Russ,
it does. It just sort of seems more, more natural. There's a more natural flow to what they're doing in my eye. But
I agree. I think on the court, Trey's showing more leadership than I've ever seen him. Or with the communicating on defense and buying in and being invested down there, and then on offense with DeJounte's got it going, Trey gives him the ball, and there's been a couple of games where Hunter's really gotten it going, and they've prioritized him some as well. So, I know everybody's mad that they lost the Hornets and they needed that game. Of course they needed that game. We're getting to the second half of the season here, and it seems like every game, the number of games that are left just kind of makes that game more important than any other one you've had in the season, because you're running out, eventually you're running out of time to kind of make up 3 or 4 games if that's where you land, kind of in the standings. But because we're human beings, you know, 6 and 9, all that travel, doesn't bother me at all. Like I said, when I wrote down their shooting performance across all four quarters, it didn't surprise me at all. And if the refs don't blow that call, they win the game. So, and they're on a 6-game win streak. So, but I mean, their games with the Bulls are always entertaining, you know. So I'm looking forward to watching that one tomorrow night and seeing you know, it's kind of funny because the last, I think, two times they played, they've treated DeMar a little bit like they treated Julius Randle in that Knicks playoff series, where they'll bring Clint across, you know, the paint and kind of just put another body on that side. DeMar loves to work down near the baseline, and I think the primary thing is to get him up. When DeMar's closer to the nail, that's when he's looking for contact and fouls. When he's down on the baseline, he wants a clean kind of turnaround. And so I'm fascinated to see what kind of defensive package they kind of bring out from the very beginning. Sometimes Nate will hold back that double and just kind of see how, say, DeAndre does with him, you know, and then maybe throw that out there if they kind of need to. So, you know, they've been a fun team. I'm expecting tomorrow night to be a fun game. I'm looking forward to seeing kind of what they throw at DeMar from the jump, and hopefully there's just the good vibes are back.
All right. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to do this, and we'll have to see what the future holds for us.
Yeah, we'll have to see, you know, where we land, if that's how it goes. But sure, we'll land on our feet one way or the other.
Have a good night.
You too. Thanks, Kevin.